When it comes to pundits, political consultants, and strategists, it's hard to find someone as outspoken, as funny, as recognizable, and yes, as successful as James Carville. In 1986, he managed Bob Casey's run for governor in Pennsylvania. 6 years later, he helped Bill Clinton win the presidency. Since then, Carville has been among the loudest and strongest voices in politics, typified by the title of his new book, 40 More Years, How the Democrats Will Rule the Next Generation. If you'd like to talk with James Carville about politics, topical or generational, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. And James Carville joins us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
And I guess we have to begin by asking about the political genius who followed you into the White House. And remember that just 4 years ago, a lot of people agreed with Karl Rove when he predicted the permanent Republican majority.
Well, this is true. And this book, well, I started work on this book shortly after the 06 elections. And actually, the thesis of it is not very controversial in the world of Washington political consultant or polling. It is that the Republicans have lost an entire generation. Everybody loses an election from time to time. If you look at the 18 to 29-year-olds, they were actually split in 2000, 49-48 for Gore. By 2004, kids only demographic that John Kerry carried, he carried it by 8 points, 54-46. In the 06 congressionals, it was up to 60% Democratic. And then when Obama ran, it was up to 66. These people are coming up through the system, and they are turning decidedly Democratic. And as they keep going through the system, you're gonna have a whole generation of Democrats go through the system with it. It's pretty much what it is. Demographics is destiny.
Rui Teixeira wrote a book along similar lines
a few
years ago, the Emerging Democratic Majority. And again, a lot of people snickered when they read it.
And Rudy was he was the kind of canary in a coal mine, if you will, because I think it came out before the 04 election.
It did, yeah.
And you can't, these things are like trying to time the stock market. You can't time it exactly. Then all of a sudden the Hispanic vote has exploded. It was 2% in 92. It's now 9%. The number of people had a single exploding, which is a pretty good predictor of voting behavior. Married people tend to vote Republican way more than single people. Guess which demographic is growing here? So, yeah, Rudy was, this is not something that, and this is, I've talked to a lot of it. In fact, in memos that we've gotten found online by Republicans that are gloomier than I am for Republicans. If you're a Republican, they're much more out there. So it's kind of odd, but this sounds sort of different and startling to someone out there, someone outside of the world of political consultant of Poland, but within the business, it's not that startling.
And let me ask you again, there was another moment when Republicans looked equally shattered, if you will, and that was after Watergate and the election of Jimmy Carter in 1976, yet the Republicans came back to win in 1980 and eventually take back the Congress. Are these things just not cyclical?
Well, first of all, they are pretty cyclical in the fact that in presidential politics, dominance is the norm as opposed to competitiveness. If you look at the three major cycles since 1896, from 96 to 32, one Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
From 32 to 68, one Republican. And from 68 to 2008, you had 28 years of Republicans, only 12 are Democrats. Now, I'm certainly not suggesting that the Democrats are going to win every election for the next 40 years. It's a provocative title. I mean, Wyoming has a Democratic governor. No one is certainly going to suggest that Wyoming is a Democratic state. What I am suggesting is that the underlying fundamentals and that party makeup are going to favor the Democrats more than the Republicans, that the playing field is not going to be exactly equal. The reason that is that the country is changing. And indulge me for about a minute here while I give you one fascinating statistic. That of the six major groups that pollsters look at the electorate, college white men, non-college white men, college white women, non-college white women, blacks, Hispanics, and others, if they would have voted exactly like they did in 2008, but you would have passed them through the 1992 electorate, McCain would have won.
Wait a minute. Come again with that?
In other words, if you took, if college-educated white men, non-college white men, college white women, non-college white women, blacks, Hispanics, would have voted just like they did in 2008, but you would have passed them through the 92 electorate, McCain would have won the election.
pass them through the 92?
Well, in other words, if the percent of the people that voted were black or Hispanic, you know, only 2% Hispanic in 1992.
I see.
If
the percentage were the same, but the overall group percentage were
right. So they go through. So the point here is that underneath the no one has sort of stopped to realize that the country is changing, and the composition of the country is changing. And if you start doing things like if you do married people as opposed to single people and you do things like that, it's hard not to see that the underlying dynamic is favoring the Democrats.
Are you comfortable with the Democratic Party? And again, going back to the statistics of the last election, rich people voted for Democrats. If you look by income, poorer people support the Republican Party.
That's a very, very, very disputed thing, and I've had Larry Bartels down in my class in New Orleans at Tulane. I have David Paul Kuhn. We've tried to look at this thing, and it's how if you define by education or you define by income. Needless to say, I am sort of racked as to who votes their interests. A lot of political scientists say no, that's not true. You know, other people have looked at this 1,000 different ways. I'm going to leave the question to sort of rich or poor. And then if you do non-white rich, there are too many definitions for me to get to that.
If you don't recognize the voice in the unlikely event, it is James Carville. His new book is 40 More Years, How the Democrats Will Rule the Next Generation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Linda's with us. Linda calling from Moscow, Idaho.
I surely am. And I'm anxious to know, Jim Carville, if you cast yourself back into the time when President Clinton was in the White House and the Monica Lewinsky affair became public, how do you think things would have changed if President Clinton had resigned? I have to say that I think we would have been spared 8 years of George W.
Well, I guess I'd have. Kind of one reaction is that the reason that we had Gore actually won the election, but let's just let, you know, just to make the point. I don't know, had President Clinton resigned, if that would have changed the outcome of the election. Perhaps it would. You can certainly argue that, but there was no reason for him to resign, I don't think, and neither did President Clinton and neither did the rest of the country.
Did the United States Senate in the
trial.
Right,
but the country was clearly did not want the president to resign as a result of that. But, I mean, that's one of those things we could go back and kind of argue that there are many things that we can say that led to the 8 years of Bush, but I don't agree with your hypothesis, but it's one that other people share with you, and it's not unreasonable.
Linda, nice to know you're not unreasonable.
Oh, I consider that an endorsement.
is Moscow, is that Idaho State or University of Idaho?
Oh, I've hung up on her already. I apologize for that. Let's see if we can go next to, this is Sean. Sean with us from Spokane in Washington.
Hello?
Hi, is it Sean or Son?
Yeah, Son.
Son, all right, go ahead.
First of all, I'm a university student of political science, so let me say, Mr. Carville, it's an honor to speak to you.
Thank you.
Second of all,
you're about to be cited in his thesis, but go ahead.
Go ahead, yeah. I teach a course in Tulane in the political science department.
Pardon me?
I said I teach a course at Tulane in the political science department.
Oh, excellent. I wish I could attend your classes.
Right.
But my question is, it sounds like your new book, you are arguing that the Democrats are, you want the Democrats to have a 40-year rule. But my question is, do you think that's going to be ideological Democrats or maybe a Democratic coalition made up of different groups, moderate Republicans, independents? The interesting thing to see in our current political environment is that Obama is really having success by not just appealing to, you know, the base of the party. He's really kind of keeping with what he was doing in the campaign of
not getting a lot of bipartisan support in Congress thus far.
Yeah, I think the Democratic Party, look, political parties evolve, they change over a period of time. I think the more interesting question here is actually what's going to happen to the Republican Party, because they're not going to stay and like run into the demographics that they're running into and stay the same. I mean, they're going to change one way or the other. Something is going to break off. In terms of what happens to the party, they're the more interesting story right now.
Well, with the defection of Arlen Specter, a lot of people are saying that, look, just look at the map around the country. You have no congressionally elected Republicans in New England, other than the two senators from Maine.
Also, a little bit more interesting than that is that 48% of all congressional Republicans and 48% of all Senate Republicans come from the original 13 states of the Confederacy. In essence, they're becoming more and more of a regional party, not just New England, you know, where they basically don't exist in terms of members of Congress. But they're not going to. But the point here is, I don't expect they're just going to stay there and keep getting beat like this.
They're going to change something. And adapt and come up with something different.
Right. And we will do what happens to parties that are in power. We'll get hubris and corruption and, you know, things will happen. But I think still my point is, in spite of all of that, the underlying dynamic will still favor us. We'll be able to make a few more mistakes than they can make.
I just think having opposition kind of keeps you honest as a party. So I'm hoping that instead of having an externalized opposition of, you know, the Republican boogeyman that they've made themselves out to be, that the opposition can come within the party.
That's a good point.
Through a different group.
Right. That's a good, that people who will guard the guardians, and the guards will guard the guardians, I guess. I'm not sure, but I understand exactly what you're saying. And again, it's a good point, but I think that the Republicans are going to adapt and get better and adjust to the new realities. But we'll wait and see. I hope I'm wrong, and I hope you're right.
And I'm sure it'll look much cleaner in his footnote.
Right.
Son, thanks right. very much for the call.
Thank you, Mr. Carville.
James Carville about his new book, 40 More Years, How the Democrats Will Rule the Next Generation. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email from Jonathan in Flint, Michigan. What does your guest make of conservative third parties? More and more libertarians and constitutionalists sound like the Republican Party of Barry Goldwater and now Ron Paul. It could be argued these fringe parties have more in common with traditional conservatism than the GOP of 2009. Do these parties have a future in competition with the left, or will they simply continue to draw votes from the GOP until the end of time?
You know, the libertarians, they can raise money. They're well organized. They have a coherent message that people can understand. Ron Paul was a articulate spokesperson. They can do everything that a political movement can do except get votes.
Except win elections.
But no, just get votes. They're not even win elections. They can't get any votes.
Why is that?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good question because it looks like, and people always say, I kind of like the libertarians. You know, I sort of agree. People, again, and they raise a ton of money. They can organize most of these Tea Party things. They were a large part of it. They're very organized. They have their own literature, and they all mm-hmm. kind of read the books, and they got their web and everything. They just can't get votes, which is kind of that doesn't speak well as of now. The thing that politicians and politics pay attention to is how many votes you get on election day. If they look at it and they just don't get any.
Let's go to Len. Len with us from Baton Rouge.
Yes, thanks for having me on. James, I've met you many times, including when you worked at Screen many years ago.
Right.
I'm really excited about what you're predicting, and I hope you're right. But as a fellow Louisianian now, what do you think? Well, first of all, Louisiana seems to be totally out of phase
right.
with national trends. What do you predict for our state in the next 10 years?
Look, Louisiana's not trending blue. It's a red state.
It's trending redder than any other state.
It's one of the redder, if you will. That's the sort of reality of the state right now. I don't. We're losing a congressional seat, so we don't have our congressional delegation. Historically, has been very powerful. We're new, and we're almost all Republicans now. So I don't know what the law. I think we'll be fine. We got a lot of creative people there. We got tons of resources. My big thing is, as you probably can guess, is rebuilding our coastline. But I think that's a topic for another.
Coastal scientist, and that's what I do.
Right.
Well, Len, we wish you the best of luck with
that. Thank you for calling, man. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye bye. Let's see if we can go now to Aaron. Aaron, with us from Little Rock. Aaron, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please, quickly.
Yes,
Aaron?
Aaron?
Aaron, I think, ran out of thoughts.
All right.
Let's see if we can go instead to, this is Jim with us from Fort Mills in South Carolina.
All
Well, Marilyn, I never run out of thoughts.
James,
great to talk to you.
Thank you.
And I always love you on the television and, of course, adore your wife.
All right,
now,
me
this
too.
Is someone who worked for Ronald Reagan in 76 and in 80. And I worked for Barack Obama this time, and I was elated to vote for a Democrat and a straight Democrat ticket. And I'll tell you, maybe I can give you some insight. I think what's happening to the Republican Party is they're turning into a goose-stepping automaton David Duke wing of the party. And that's why I think your book is correct.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, I'm sure that there's some Republicans that, you know, would say that they're trying to get bring their party back, et cetera. But I don't think that there's any doubt. I think when the history of this the current Republican troubles, if you will, for lack of a better word, or their unpleasantness, which is the Civil War, what it used to call the Civil War, the recent unpleasantness.
Yeah.
But we know about Katrina, we know about Iraq. I think the Terri Schiavo thing was a big, big deal in their trouble.
And, that, and overlooked by a lot of people.
Yeah, the public just thought it was a horrible overreach and arrogant and just misguided priorities. And so I appreciate your call, and that there are a lot of I might not use language quite like yours, but they do seem to be not very tolerant of dissent in their party in some quarters.
Well,
Jim,
Jim,
I'm going to cut you off because we wanted to get one last email in before we have to go. And this is from Karen in Williamsburg. I have a very personal question. I'm a very liberal Democrat and have just become romantically involved with a man who is about as far right as you can go. How do you and your wife manage to avoid arguments over politics?
We don't. Sometimes we try to avoid it where possible. You know, we like any other married couple, we argue from time to time.
it's not about who did the dishes or took out the garbage.
No, it's about, you know, usually it's about something else. It's about money sometimes. It's about the kids, and you know what I mean? It's about politics. It's all of the things. This cannot be avoided.
James Carville, thanks
you.
Very much. Appreciate your time
today. Thank
you
today. Very much. Appreciate it.
James Carville, a Democratic political consultant, the author of 40 More Years, How the Democrats Will Rule the Next Generation, with us here in Studio 3A. You can find an excerpt from his book at our website, npr.org. Tomorrow at Science Friday, Ira Flatow will be here. The new administration has big goals to boost science in America. How are they going to reach them? That and more tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.